Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Sue Dale Hall. Dale Hall has a master's degree in public administration and public policy from Indiana University. She has a broad background in nonprofit community development work on behalf of children and families, ranging in healthcare and community action. Since 1992, she has been the CEO of the Child Development Council of Central New York. And as this great organization celebrates its 50th anniversary, Sue Dale Hall celebrates her 25th year as their inspiring CEO and leader. And welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, congratulations, too. This is a great, great anniversary. Now, I know the mission is to promote healthy development of children in their individual lives as well as in the community. So let's begin with families. What are the main stresses that are happening right now with families in our community?
I like to look back at my School of Hard Knocks through over the years and what I've learned and how things have changed. And I think that we see a lot of differences in the last 25 years, and certainly in the last 50 years, there's been some significant changes. Some things stay the same. Mm. So we know that the places where children are from day to day has changed. There are not as many children at home as there used to be. Neighborhoods, children don't have that freedom to sort of run the neighborhood, and or even out on farms. They don't have as much freedom to or opportunities to take risks.
Do you think that's because families are more afraid because of the way the culture has evolved, or is there really not space anymore for kids to run around?
I think some of it's the nature of the fact that families have to go to work. So they're not home in the neighborhood. They're not home necessarily taking care of their children at home during the day.
Yeah.
So I think that's a piece of it. I think lives are busier by and large, you know, and I think that opportunity to take risks is a big loss for us. You know, we can we can have cage-free chickens, but we can't have free-range kids, you know, so.
You know, I have noticed that's one of the things that I have noticed most of all about the way kids are being brought up now. We used to be able to run down to the beach and our parents didn't care, just be home for dinner, be home before dark, you know, that kind of thing. But you also talk about something that I hadn't thought about, probably because of middle classness and so on, but food insecurity is a big problem for kids, especially in some of the rural areas. Talk about how you deal with that.
Well, we're really concerned particularly about those families that are isolated. If you're not in a child care program, if you're in a regulated child care program, you're going to get meals every day, except for weekends and summertime. But babies aren't often in child care program. There's just not enough for them. So one in five children, 20% of the kids in our area, are food insecure. They don't have enough food. And what we find with families with babies is they water down that formula or they try to stretch it out, and the children don't get the nutrition that they need. It's so very important. So we're, I think, as a community trying to do better, and I hope many communities across the United States are trying to do better about how do we feed people? How can we do that?
Yeah. And then so what is the Child Development Council doing about it? Are you, I mean, you have programs, right?
We do.
Yeah.
So one of our programs is Family Support Services, and we work directly with the parents of young children. And our job is really to look at and help support them in a holistic way. What kinds of things do they need to sort of build that family household? Let's hope it's not fully out of a house of cards, but let's hope that what we can do is help put some stability in.
Mm.
So we know that families that are struggling, one piece often falls off. And if it's food, we might be able to help them access that. We might actually provide transportation to the food pantry to pick up a bag of food. We might be able to provide them formula, especially for those children who need some kind of specialized formula.
Mm-hmm.
We might be able to, so we can individualize it based upon that family situation and what resources there are out there in the community.
Yeah. How do you find out about families in need? Are you coalescing with the schools, and do the schools call you? You know why I ask that? Because a lot of families are embarrassed to admit they need help.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you actually help them without them coming to you?
Well, we have some limitations on how many people we can serve. So a lot of people who are struggling are low-income families. And women often start out at the health department with a home nurse that is going to come for one or two visits, maybe a few more if the child's particularly at risk. But they don't serve them ongoing. And so both the Department of Social Services and individual word of mouth and the health department, people can come to us on a voluntary basis and get as much help as they need over a course of sometimes years.
Yeah, so you're actually working with a whole bunch of different organizations, right?
That
help feed in the needs and,
and
what
degree,
you can do.
Right, to some degree, sort of a hub for that family to connect with all the different resources that
and
are out there.
And then you can say, you need to go here and you need to go there. That's really, God, that's a huge service. It's amazing. How do you deal with abuse in families? Because it seems to me these stresses, food insecurity, job insecurity, can lead to abusive families. Did you hear about that all the time and have to channel?
We do. We have to make sure the children are safe. That's the number one thing. But our efforts are really geared around trying to help prevent those kinds of stressors from happening and trying to make sure that the house is as stable an environment for the child as it can be. So we like to look at our work as on the preventive or early intervention side of things. We do have some support linkages with programs. So families who've been hotlined, but there's not an imminent danger or a need for investigation, can come and get sort of that ongoing support. Because as they develop a plan, like how am I going to get out of this mess? How am I going to help improve my own situation? They often find that if they're left all alone, they don't have any access to those resources. They're not as successful.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned that no families are really self-sufficient. I mean, that's kind of a myth, that we all can pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and individually live our lives without any kind of help. So talk to us about that. I mean, the political and social decisions that are happening affect all these families, and they don't even realize it in some ways.
I think we tend to label families that are, particularly those who might be at risk or vulnerable in some way. We label them, the low-income families, as having gotten themselves in that situation, or it's generations. There's nothing you can do about it. And in fact, I like to look at families in a whole nother way. I like to look at families, as particularly those families who are facing the biggest things, as highly successful. They're just not successful in the way that you and I might define it, or the way that society defines it, as you make a lot of money. They're more successful in the fact that they've been able to keep their head above water despite all these challenges that they're facing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing to me. We had a woman that we worked with who had two young children, and she cared very much about what was going to happen with those young children. And so she got them into Head Start. Now, Head Start doesn't provide transportation anymore. So she got them on the bus in the morning. She went with them to their Head Start. And then she waited for the second bus, and she would come into town. She had to live out in the rural area because it costs too much to live in town. And she would take two buses, two different legs of the trip, into town and then walk to work. And that took 3.5 hours.
Wow.
And then she could work 2 hours because it's not a full-day program. She had to turn around and reverse the process. So she'd end up working 7 hours, traveling 7 hours a day for 2 hours of work. Now, that's dedication, and that's success for her.
Yeah.
That's the best thing that could happen. And some people would look at her and say, you know, why isn't she doing more? Why isn't she working more and paying for more of her own way? And the reality is, she's doing the best that she can with the set of resources and constraints that she has. And that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And you know, that's what we have to change in this culture and in these communities, the judgment of people, because people are doing the best they can, and there are limited resources. And let's talk about childcare, because it's still controversial, and I can't believe it isn't universal. So tell us about childcare problems and low-income people and how it's not available for anybody, really.
Well, childcare is one of those cornerstones in families' lives. Housing, transportation, food, and childcare. They all go together, and if they're strong and they're steady and you have a little bit of reserve, you're going to do okay. And childcare is really important to families. But one of the challenges that we face is that it's defined in so many different ways.
And
it's really a disparate group of different kinds of activities. Now, one of the things that I like about that, so childcare can be in someone's home in a neighborhood, or it could be in a trailer park, or out in the woods in a house where the child has lots more room to roam. it could be nights and weekends and someone in a bed, somebody, you know, their own bed or some other bed, but yeah. that's where the child care is happening. Or it might be in several different kinds of settings. And the child care centers, some are big, some are small. And what this diversity really gives families is some choice about what's the right fit for their child. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the cost takes some of that choice away from them.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, our job as an organization is to try to help the community see its value, see early care and education and child care, see its value, and to recognize that diversity as a system, and to try to help put those pieces together with for families and for the community.
Yeah, and, you know, people don't think about the fact that early development is so, you know, dependent upon this kind of child care, because a child that's insecure might start acting out as an older kid. You know, I mean, it starts with a kid being secure, it seems to me. And what about mentors, too? Don't you think that's an important aspect of it, too?
Early childhood, your whole life is built upon your relationships. Yeah. So that's where we start, and that can happen for the individual child or for the caregivers. So the mentoring could come in with the caregivers. It might also come in with each individual child, and as they grow and develop, and making sure the more caring people they have in their lives, the more likely they're going to be successful in the long run.
Yeah.
So helping children access that, I remember when my son was young, he was very upset one day, and he said, "I want my mommy." And I said, "Well, I'm here. What do you need?" And he said, "I don't want you. I want the other mommy." And he was
wow.
talking about his child care provider. Now, in some families, that might be a threat. It might feel threatening to have your child care as much about someone else as they care about you. But the reality is, that's good for children.
Oh, it is. Do you think a lot of parents are afraid of losing their child's love and affection by letting another adult take care of them in a loving way?
I think there are some families that are afraid of that. That might be changing. I don't really know, because childcare is so common now.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
so many people need it, and they find in the long run that they're happier when the child gets along real well with that other caregiver. And they're also happier when that other caregiver has a relationship with them kind of similar to your own, that they care about them, the child, in the same
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I do believe in that adage that it takes a village to raise a kid. And there's no reason why you should isolate a kid because of your own insecurities, I suppose. Now, you also have talked about how kids don't just need food and housing. They need emotional and social support. So talk to us about how the council deals with those issues.
One of the things that we do is to try to make sure that the world knows about babies and what happens as children grow. At the very, very beginning of life, they come in with all this energy, neurons, billions of them, and they don't have, they're not connected. There's no good pathways. Some of them are, of course. They can, you know, eat and breathe and whatnot.
Involuntary life.
Right. But you're developing those pathways. And I like to think of it for myself as, you know, when I go to walk my dog through the woods in the snow, it's easier to take a path that's already there.
Mm.
So as kids are developing and they're trying to connect the inner part of their brain, it's called the limbic system, that's social and emotional, the emotional pieces, the amygdala that controls fight or flight. When they're starting to grow up, they need that part of their brain to connect with their front part of their brain that helps with organization and decision making, and it's the executive functions of the brain. And so you want that pathway to be clear, because this is what's happening with kids today, is that we're seeing more and more kids with social emotional issues, and we want to make sure those pathways are started out right from the beginning. There was a study in 2005, and it's been repeated, but it showed that preschoolers were being expelled from childcare at a rate three times that of kids in kindergarten through 12. That's horrible. It makes my gut hurt.
Wow.
Imagine what it's like to be a young child and not being able to fit in, and over, and to have that happen more than once and not really quite ever getting that connection that you need at that early age. And so that's why childcare is so important.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Sue Dale Hall. She's the CEO of the Child Development Council of Central New York, known as the Child Development Council by among us who live in this region. She's celebrating her 25th anniversary at the helm, and we're talking about some of the issues that have come up in the last 24 years, and including new problems and ideas about child care. You know what I have noticed that has probably changed a lot since you started? More grandparents are doing primary child care, single parents, especially single mothers. To talk to us about the stresses of that. I mean, that is huge.
It is huge. So for grandparents, certainly the way that you parent has changed a little bit. The environment has changed, so there's more technology involved in it.
Oh, yeah.
For good or for bad, still somewhat yet to be determined. Mm-hmm. Grandparents sometimes have their own jobs. Sometimes they have the gift of time to spend with the children. So that's a good thing. But it's difficult for them. And they don't always have the resources to raise a child. I had one woman say, you know, I got my knees done. I can't go crawling around on the floor anymore. And so sometimes that's the situation for folks. Single parents, again, it depends on how well they're connected to other family or friends or the community
or
at large.
Or whether the other parent is involved, too.
Yeah, there's a high rate of... So what we found when we surveyed parents is that and this happens more and more with single parents, if they don't have enough resources to pay for childcare or the support for their kids, the things that they give up are those basic needs. They go back to not having quite enough food for their family,
wow,
or not able to pay their medical bills, or not paying their child care bill, or other kinds of things that really provide that early stability.
Wow, that's, I mean, the problems just keep cropping up. We're never going to reach a point where you don't need the Child Development Council, right? How has the opioid epidemic affected anything that you do in the community?
Certainly that if a mom is using any kind of drug, that can translate to either when she's pregnant directly to the child, and there are lifelong impacts of that, or to the household and the environment or wherever that child may be living.
Are you seeing those problems cropping up more, like in the general community?
Yeah, certainly we do. And we know that it's related to our work in more than one way. It's related in that, you know, what happens early in all children's lives, but also in the environments that they're in, and then how do they move on from that, and how do we, children tend to do best if we, even if there's been a problem in the family, if we can get them back with that family. So there's a lot of work to be done. If there's any kind of substance abuse in the household or alcoholism, there's a lot of lifelong efforts to try to help that family remain stable.
Yeah, so that just adds another layer to, I mean, I'm sure the mission of the Child Development Council has changed so much through the years. All these new things like grandparenting and as primary and opioid addiction. And
I think, we're more aware of trauma and the impacts of trauma, and certainly substance abuse and child abuse fall into that category. We're also more aware, the research is telling us more about toxic stress, and that's unrelenting stress that can be in a household and in a neighborhood. And so in some big cities, they're facing, you know, gangs in
gang
the neighborhood,
violence,
and that kind of toxic regular stress can happen right here in a small community like ours as well. And so we know now that there are children lose some of their language skills, that when they are facing this, they have really physical responses that can pop up at different times throughout their lives as they get older. And so we're more aware of what we need to do to try to address that. That is one of the things that certainly has at least become, we're more aware of it. Not to say that problems didn't exist before.
Oh, yeah. You know, I read something in the New York Times about there are some kids under toxic stress, as you call it, who end up almost unconscious.
Yeah.
You know, they're not really unconscious or in comas, but they lose their function.
Yes.
And they think it is due to stress. That's remarkable.
It is. When there's they did a cortisol study.
Cortisol study.
That's a little difficult to say sometimes, but with women who are pregnant during 9/11. And what happened afterwards with the birth of that child, and their the children continued to carry that stress hormone in throughout their bodies in their lives, and it tells us a lot.
It tells us
a lot about the immediacy of our work and how important it is to pay attention now. I think that's one of the things with early childhood is people say, oh, they don't really need much.
Yeah, and they don't remember.
It's not, they don't remember. It's not important now, but later on it's important. And it's a lot more money for a community. It's a lot harder work for a family to remediate crises.
Yeah. And I, you know, I don't believe that. I believe that, that we carry on. I always say that we're ghosting our relatives.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know why we react certain ways. Well, I think the ghost of blah, blah, blah is behind it. you know what a lot of people think about when they think about childcare? They think about the cost. But, you know, I assume the cost is a meaning of, like, concrete childcare. I have to pay $13,000 a year to take my kid to this one place. Ted, tell us about how people are dealing with cost. Are there grants?
Well, there's two sides to the cost issue. And one is what it means for parents, and the other is the what it means for the workers, because childcare is really subsidized on the back of workers.
Yes.
So when I was a teenager, I babysat for 50 cents an hour, but my brother got a lot more money mowing lawns.
Oh, yes.
I look at that kind of analogy today, and I'm saying the caregivers still aren't getting paid the wage that they deserve for the importance of their work.
Oh, absolutely.
And the education and what they bring to it. And so that's how childcare is subsidized. And some families will look at us and say, and they're right, it costs too much for what they can afford. But it doesn't cost too much for the value of that as a service to the community and to the children.
Yeah.
So I think we have to look at it. So if families are paying more than 10% or 15% of their income on childcare, and it can be as much as college education, $8,000-$9,000 up to $12,000-$13,000, depending upon the age of your child and what kind of care you're getting and where it's located. That's enormous. So a child care provider, if she's making $22,000 a year and she has to pay $10,000 for her child care, that doesn't make sense. She can't afford to put her own children into the child care program where she works.
Yeah, and on the other hand, she can't afford to pursue her career either, so everybody ends up losing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's just, you know what I want to ask you, too? How do you keep up with all this stuff? Do you have to take classes? Do you have to find out? I mean, that study that you were talking about, that how the toxins stayed with kids born during 9/11.
Well, I have to read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I have to stay in touch with where the research is going. And I have networks around me that help make that happen, because none of us can do it alone.
Yeah. I was wondering how you keep up with things, because you always seem to be so well informed about the latest stuff that's going on top of crises every day, I'm sure, at the office. You know, one thing that you did say to me, and I want to bring this up, you say that the city of Ithaca is great about sustainability and bike paths and making it livable, but they are still missing in regard to childcare.
Childcare downtown in our community is almost like a desert.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about food deserts, so this is the childcare desert. We really don't have a lot here. And as our local elected officials are looking at this idea of a walkable community and a sustainable community for young families and young professionals, they're building spaces up, and they're not considering yet. I'm pushing this. I'm not letting it go. They're not yet putting childcare into those. We're trying to look at some creative ways to make that happen.
Is it because there's not the political will, or is it because there's a lack of awareness? Because this certainly is a big family community in many ways.
It is. I think it's very costly to start a child care center, for example.
Yeah.
That's the most enduring, stable kind of care out there. And that it costs, building costs alone are more than what most people are willing to put in. And a lot of businesses historically that have helped provide child care for their workers are saying it's costing us too much money. We can't do that as a benefit.
Hmm. Are there models in communities outside of the Finger Lakes that might be sustainable or you know, affordable?
There are lots of models, but most of them are sort of piecemeal.
Mm.
So what can we do to help give tax breaks to employers? What can we do to help give tax breaks to employees? Certainly, we have a great model here where child care subsidies are given to Cornell employees. It's an incredible support system.
Yeah.
Does Cornell tell me that they still need more childcare? They absolutely do. It's a big workforce. And people traveling in and out of the county towards Cornell need childcare in this area. So we are trying to look at how we can have more opportunities to build smaller centers that sort of fit with this walkable community kind of thing, and small, maybe childcare homes that are in downtown but subsidized, so that it becomes workable. It's sort of a work in progress.
Oh, I can imagine. But it seems to me it should be a priority. I see no reason why people don't understand that ramifications across the board in regard to childcare.
Right.
You know, the community, the workforce, everything, health.
We've had national economists say this is the best investment you can make. It returns to your community in real dollars. Those dollars are, you know, stimulate our local economy, and we get the long-term benefits that healthy kids bring to the community, like the ability to work and hold a job and buy a house and all those good things and stay out of jail, you know, and it does all those things, and research tells us that. So it's always interesting to me that it feels like I don't understand why everyone else hasn't bought into this.
Yeah, I know. You have to sell people the will to do this. And how do you?
That's right. I'm working on that.
You got to have an advertising campaign for you to do good things for your own self.
That's right. Have I got you sold?
You've also talked about how the tax benefits are often offered to families for childcare and for child help. Does that make sense?
Well, it does and it doesn't. I mean, certainly there's a benefit, but it's a small economic dollar return. And so low-wage earners aren't often paying even any federal taxes, so that federal tax benefits don't really benefit them. So we really have to sort of remake that system if it's going to work. I'm a firm believer that because everything is so fragmented that we kind of need to put everything together. We need to look at how can we support it as a system and create one way for families to access support.
Yeah. Sue, we're almost out of time. This is your 25th anniversary, as I said, at the helm. But to tell us what you have learned, what has kept you there? Just your continuing love for children, I assume.
You know, it's interesting. I never thought I would stay that long. I thought I was coming into this as, you know, part of my own career path. And I look back at the years before that. Everything kind of prepared me for this. Mm. And so now I can look back and say, oh, yeah, it makes sense that I'm here. You know, I worked with individuals who were escaping abusive households, and they needed childcare, and they needed a safe environment for their kids, and they needed support. And I worked with substance abusers, actually, and I was a counselor. Maybe not my best skill, but I did it and I learned from it. And so now as I did community development work, and that one of the things that I like about this organization particularly is that it blends that direct support for families, that really tangible, hands-on, relational support for families with this idea of we need a community development model. And there's a little bit of policy and public policy and advocacy, which is sort of ties all the way back to my early education and training. So I've learned that you have to be persistent.
I think
that's the message of the year, right? We have to be persistent and just keep working at it. Keep selling that message over and over again.
Yeah, in spite of the political chaos and in the current environment.
Exactly.
Right now. Yeah, well, congratulations. I think you're doing a fabulous job, and I hear nothing but good things.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us, and give us some contact information if people want to get in touch.
You can contact me directly at sue@childdevelopmentcouncil.org or childdevelopmentcouncil.org.
Yeah. Well, Sue Dale Hall, thank you so much for joining us. Again, I've been talking to Sue Dale Hall, the CEO of the Child Development Council of Central New York. And thank you so much. Continue the good work.
Thank you very much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.